Welcome to ClinFern Pod. I'm Elena Webster, Deputy Managing Editor for the ASCPT family of journals. My guests today are Dr. Pete Vandergraaff, Senior Vice President at Certara and outgoing Editor-in-Chief of Clinical Pharmacology and Therapeutics, and Dr. Kathy Giacomini, Dean at the University of California San Francisco School of Pharmacy and outgoing Deputy Editor-in-Chief for Clinical Pharmacology and Therapeutics. I'm hoping this is not the final time, but welcome back to ClinFarm Pod.
Thanks, Elena. It's always a pleasure to be on ClinFarm Pod. It may be our last one, but yeah, who knows? Maybe not.
I'm crossing my fingers. Hopefully not. So while I love chatting with both of you for this conversation, I'm going to turn it over to the two of you. I'm hoping you will not only reminisce about your time leading CPT, but also delve into your career journeys and what brought you to clinical pharmacology and translational science. I'm excited to listen in, but for now, I'm going to bow out. So, Cappy, would you get us started?
Yes. So, Pete, I want to talk to you about your time with CPT, and we'll get to that. But first, I'd like to take you back a bit to the beginning of your career in clinical pharmacology. At what point did you decide you wanted to study pharmacology and then clinical pharmacology? Is there any particular life event or occurrence that influenced that decision?
Yeah, thanks, Kathy. So I'll have to go back quite some time. So like you, I studied pharmacy. And after my pharmacy degree, I had to decide, did I want to go into pharmacy practice or in research? And for me, that was a fairly easy choice. I really wanted to go into research. And I suppose my first step into pharmacology, and as I'll explain later, I think it was a three-step kind of process to land in clinical pharmacology. So my first step was when I was lucky to get a PhD position at King's College in London with Sir James Black. It was the most important mentor, I think, in my career. So he really introduced me to pharmacology, and particularly quantitative pharmacology. Now, it wasn't very clinical. It was an isolated organ bath kind of pharmacology, but it taught me the principles of quantitative pharmacology. The next step is that I felt, okay, I really know a bit about pharmacology now, but very little, if anything, about pharmacokinetics, let alone pharmacokinetics, pharmacodynamics. So that made me move to Leiden University for my postdoc, where the second kind of pair of most important mentors of my career emerged, Douwe Breimer and Meinert Damhoff. Now, I think, Kathy, this is probably where we first must have interacted. I can't remember, but in those days, Leiden, UCSF, and only very few other universities were the leaders in that field, right? And so we must have, at that point, kind of interacted because, you know, you knew Douwe, you were at UCSF, and I think that was probably the start of our kind of collaboration quite a while ago. Anyway, my final step into actual clinical pharmacology happened at Pfizer. So I moved to industry, worked at Pfizer in different stages of R&D. And my final stage was in clinical pharmacology, two key mentors, Don Nichols and Rick Lalonde. And I think we'll probably talk about Rick later when we talk about PSP and CPT.
Oh, how nice. Yeah, I hadn't realized you were so connected to Rick in that way. I didn't know that because, you know, he and I were together as chair and president-elect of ASCPT.
Yeah. So maybe, Kathy, could I ask you the same? So how did you kind of evolve, like, student to now, like, dean of School of Pharmacy, if you see?
A long way. Yeah, it's not too different, a little different from you, but not too different. So I started out in pharmacy. And then when I graduated, like you, I had to decide what I wanted to do with my life. And I had fallen in love with the sciences of pharmacy. I love med chem, and pharmacokinetics was just getting going. And I love the idea of combining math and science and getting into pharmacokinetics. And so I applied for a PhD after I received my bachelor's degree in pharmacy. I applied for a PhD and was accepted by State University of New York at Buffalo and Gerhard Levy. So Gerhard Levy, one of our forefathers or grandfathers of pharmacokinetics, was my first mentor. And I learned pharmacokinetics very rigorously with him and Milo Gibaldi. And I got my PhD. And then I went to Stanford for a postdoc. because my husband had matched in cardiology there. And so I worked in the laboratory of Terry Blaschke, a clinical pharmacologist. And Terry got me very enthused about clinical pharmacology, but my mind kept asking questions about how are these drugs actively cleared, actively transported by the kidney? What's going on there? So I increasingly became molecular as I began to think, what's going on for the mechanisms of the pharmacokinetics that I was looking at? And so I worked in another person's laboratory there who was using membrane vesicles, and I got into carriers, which later became transporters. And then Les Bennett recruited me to UCSF, and I became an assistant professor at UCSF. And I began to apply for grants on these mechanisms, these carrier proteins, which became transporters later. And so I grew in the transporter area, and the transporter area related to drugs. Very few people were in that space. And then that evolved into the molecular biology era. And that's when I began to clone transporters, really learning the molecular mechanisms. And then we got into pharmacogenomics and the genetic variants in transporters. And I went back to clinical because I wanted to know what those genetic variants did clinically. So I went from making those basic discoveries of the molecular identity of these transporters, learning about what the variants did to their function, and then went all the way back to clinical. And I got back and active in clinical pharmacology. So I had started with Gerhard Levy, more clinical, went to Terry Blaschke clinical, went to molecular, and then I came back to clinical because in the end, what it does in humans mattered to me. So right. That was my step. And then long career here. And of course, at some point they asked me to be dean and I said, absolutely, I'll do it. So here
I am. That's wonderful. But that's incredible and remarkable. Are all the big names, you know, some like Gerhard Levy, Terry Blaschke, Les Bennett. If you go back in CPT to some of our kind of seminal kind of classical papers, you know, those names will appear.
Yeah. I'd like to ask you now, Pete. So now that sort of we've established how you got into clinical pharmacology, your mentors, and now you're working in industry, my question to you is, when did you join ASCPT and how were you involved in the society before coming to the journal itself?
Yeah, that's a great question. I joined ASCPT probably about 20 years ago. So I was at Pfizer and don't tell anyone. At that point, to be honest, I didn't really know much about ASCPT. My kind of home in a professional sense was the British Pharmacological Society because I did my PhD in the UK. I worked in the UK. That was really our kind of home. It was and still is a great society. But certainly in those days, the emphasis was more on fundamental pharmacology, not so much on clinical pharmacology. Anyway, I mentioned Rick Lalonde, my mentor at Pfizer, and he at some point said, Pete, I really think you should join ASCPT. And I said, why? And he said, just trust me. Just do it. I often tell people that was the best career advice I probably ever got. So I joined, I think, in 2007-08. I chaired a symposium. And from then on, I almost developed like a parallel career next to my kind of day job. I got involved in so many things and met so many remarkable people. You know, obviously the focus of this podcast is the journals, but also got involved in strategic planning committees. I chaired the scientific committee of one of the annual meetings and many other things. And it's just been incredible. I mean, ASCPT has given me so much.
Yes, I can imagine because ASCPT is there for everyone with all their different communities and all the different ways you can participate in the organization. I had a similar track to ASCPT, not too different from yours again. It wasn't Rick Lalonde who told me, but I was in Terry Blaschke's lab, and that was his go-to society. Back then, ASCPT was highly MD oriented, you know, back when I began. And so the physician scientist in clinical pharmacology went to ASCPT. So Terry said, as long as I was in his lab, I needed to be going to ASCPT. But I got so involved in ASCPT. And like you, I began to participate in all the various activities back then. They had things like communities. They were little sections. And I belonged to different sections according to my research interests. I belonged on the governance committee. I liked they had one that was an advocacy for clinical pharmacology. I belonged to that. So I just became so active in the society. And then when I was a faculty member, I had to have a place to bring my students and a place where they could meet people and they could network and form these lifelong connections. So I started bringing my students to ASCPT. And I would say many of them are still very active students, postdocs, everyone in ASCPT. It's just a great place to grow your career. So, yes.
I agree.
So you're in the society, you're into clinical pharmacology, and now somehow you become the editor-in-chief of Clinical Pharmacology and Therapeutics, a journal. So can you describe sort of how that happened?
I'm going to thank you, Kathy, because you actually played a key role in my first step towards CPT. So this is 2011. Rick Lalonde was president of ASCPT, and he, I think, with other people, of course, came up with the brilliant idea to launch a whole new journal, a sister journal of CPT called CPT Pharmacometrics and System Pharmacology. Now, that was incredibly visionary because in those days, MIDD was still somewhat of an emerging science, and I think it was incredibly visionary and brave of ASCPT to kind of decide to launch a journal fully dedicated to that new field. So they advertised for an editor-in-chief of that new journal. I saw the advert and I thought, yeah, that would be like my dream, but no way I'm going to be that person. Now, thankfully, some colleagues and friends encouraged me and they said, Pete, this is really you. So I said, well, you know, okay, I'll apply. And, you know, anyway, I got invited for the interview. I thought, well, why not? I probably gave the best interview of my life because I really, really wanted it. It was like, really, okay, this is my dream. And I think in that conversation with the panel, I managed to explain to them that this is really something that I really wanted. I got the job. And that was when you were president, Kathy.
Yes.
And actually, you were going to introduce me to the annual meeting in 2012. Which got a little kind of sidetracked because I just had surgery on my foot so I could travel.
Do you remember?
I think it was a video link announcing me as the new editor-in-chief of PSP. So anyway, this was you and Rick. I had the most wonderful time launching PSP with a brilliant team, with Lena Freeberg as my deputy and a wonderful team. And I was kind of thinking I would continue to do that for quite some time. At some point, Scott Waldman, our predecessor in CPT, decided to step down. And Dan Hartman actually approached me, who was president at the time when Scott retired, and said, Pete, given your experience at PSP, would you be interested to take on CPT? And I was like, well, you've got to be kidding me, right? CPT, that's like the big world, right? Anyway, same thing happens. You know, I interviewed and very fortunate to be given the opportunity. And obviously then I had to think about, okay, who's going to be in my new team? And the first question was, okay, who's going to be my deputy? And I approached you, Kathy, and maybe you should explain, because I, again, was like, yeah, I can ask, but surely she's not going to do it. And I don't think it took you very long to say yes. So what made you decide to join the new CPT team and work with me?
Well, it's very interesting what you're saying, because I feel like you weren't really another editor. Your first editor-in-chief job was PSP, right? That was your first job. So I had always enjoyed working with you, and I love to serve our society in some way. And I thought, well, being a deputy editor, I'd never had that experience. I love working on teams. And I know that you're a team builder. One of your biggest strengths is that you are a promoter of a team, like you're a coach. You have the enthusiasm, you put the players in, you use each of the people strategically in a way. So I said yes, just because I thought that would be a fun experience. I could give back to the society and I could be part of your team. And that was a very fun 5 years we've had together.
Thank you so much, Kathy. Yeah. You know, likewise, working with you has been just, you know, incredible. And I think we were a pretty good kind of team ourselves, right?
I felt we very much complemented each other because, first of all, you have your interest, pharmacometrics, systems pharmacology with all the quantitative sciences. I don't have the quantitative sciences, but I did have a lot of the mechanism and that basic pharmacology that complements clinical pharmacology and pharmacogenomics, one of our flagship ideas, you know, one of our themes. So yes, I had that.
I think CPT, I mean, obviously before CPT, you were involved in quite a few other journals in different roles, but, you know, leading the journal. So looking back, what was the most surprising aspect for you in leading CPT?
You know, it's funny. I had a lot of surprises. I think one of the things I noted about journal work is that you do spend a lot of alone time. You have to read the papers that come your way. You have to then read the literature and put it in the context of the paper you're reviewing, in the context of what is this paper contributing to the scientific society and to the fields purportedly in. And then you have to make that triage decision. And after that, you have to get good reviewers, you have to read their reviews, and you have to make that decision to accept. And it always felt so alone because, you know, you're making, it's an important, people have worked hard on this paper, they've submitted it to us, and you're going to tell them, uh-uh. And then we started this consulting where I think, Pete, you might have been the person who suggested that, you know, before we make a triage decision, we could open up a consulting session. And I think when I opened up those consulting sessions, before I made the decision to triage or to do anything, I could ask my fellow editors, you could select who to ask. And I got their opinions and they would write, you know, some of them would write very long opinions, very reasoned opinions. And so I would get a feeling and suddenly I realized that a lot of my thinking, a lot of the way I was reasoning, others also reasoned similarly. So I found that surprising because I was doing it on my own. I love those consulting sessions.
Yeah, that's probably similar. I don't know if it's a real surprise because, you know, I was expecting to work with great people. But even having the very high expectations, I was still surprised how phenomenal that team was, you know, really working with not just leaders in the fields from who you learn like all the time, but also the CPT team was just, I don't know, they were so purpose driven and dedicated just to do the right thing. There was never anything else than we just want to do the right thing. You know, we want to publish the best science and serve the discipline of clinical pharmacology.
Yes, I agree with you. It was just a team of people who cared. And people, as you say, it's not just a bunch of people who are famous and well-known. People in the trenches doing their own work, looking at it from their perspective. You're so right. With everybody trying their best to do the right thing.
Yeah. And as you say, you know, sometimes it may have felt lonely, but then you think, you know, someone like you and everyone else, you know, all leaders in the field, people who are very busy. And yeah, maybe I was surprised the level of diligence, you know, people were actually reading everything, right? And just making kind of very informed decisions, not just skimming over it and just, you know, so yeah, I was somewhat surprised by the level of dedication, maybe, which cannot be underestimated and it is really remarkable.
Yes, I totally agree. Yeah.
So here's a difficult one because there's so many things probably you can think of, but what, you know, what is there an accomplishment or initiative that we kind of achieved in the last 6 years in CPT that you are particularly proud of, Kathy?
Well, let me put it in perspective, Pete. You and I went through a lot together because during the period that you were the editor-in-chief and I was a deputy editor, with our team, we went through a pandemic such as the world had never seen. So the COVID pandemic, we owned it. And we started publishing papers in COVID as well. And then we went through this wonderful artificial intelligence just hit the road. And all of us were, you know, taken by storm with AI. And so I'm putting that as a backdrop because what I liked the most, actually, if I said, what is the accomplishment that I'm proud of? I liked writing the initial editorial with you, predicting when we first began, I think in 2020, it predicted sort of what the world was going to be like. Who could have predicted the pandemic? I don't think we predicted that one, but predicted what clinical pharmacology was going to have, what were going to be the breakthroughs, all of that. And then the final editorial, where we said, how did we do? And we didn't do so badly. And I was very proud of that, because it is hard to have a crystal ball. But we saw real world data. We knew big data was coming. We may not have mentioned the word AI. I mean, we might have. But we were really knowing the quantitative aspects of pharmacology, the model prediction, all of that was coming. And so I'm most proud of the fact that we were able to have a somewhat crystal and not as opaque crystal ball to look through. So, yes.
So I think we summarized some of this in our parting editorial in December issue. But I think some of it is, like you, I'm proud that we managed to foresee some big topics ahead of the curve. Some of the listeners may not realize that when we plan a themed issue for CPT, we do that kind of a year in advance. So you really have to think about, okay, in a year's time, what's going to be like a big emerging topic? And I think we got this kind of right a few times, as you mentioned, real-world evidence before we took over. I don't think featured at all in CPT. We kind of felt it would be a big topic. And now I think in the top three of clinical pharmacology. So I think we got that one right. You mentioned AI, data science. We had a very meaty issue, which was before AI became really the big kind of hype as it is now. And the other one I think I'm particularly proud of is that I think we pioneered defining what diversity, equity, and inclusion means in the context of clinical pharmacology. We had a wonderful special issue, I think it was in 2020, with one of the greatest covers, I think, that we came up with, which was the rainbow-colored pot of pills, focusing very much on clinical pharmacology in the context of diversity and almost redefining clinical pharmacology, the science of diversity, right? Our remit is to get every individual the right medicine, the right dose. So that is really what we do for a living. So I'm very proud of that too.
Yes, thank you, Peter. Thanks for reminding me of that. I think it was you, again, you have such an original creative mind that really sort of put it all together, that if we really think about what clinical pharmacology is, it's all about diversity. It's all about getting the dose right for every individual and getting the drug right. So yeah, no, great. I love that. I also love that issue. That was great.
So maybe moving more not on the scientific topics, but on the world of publishing, which obviously is in constant flux. When we took over, open access was a real big topic. People were uncertain, perhaps, what the future of journals like CPT would look like. We had to navigate across that landscape. So from your perspective, what has changed most in terms of the research we saw, the peer review, how people submit papers, the kind of papers? What's the biggest change that you've seen over the last 6 years or so?
Yeah, so I would say the biggest, we got to the AI era, we started seeing more papers, a lot more papers. And I don't know if that's still true today, but at the very end, we were just seeing a lot more papers. We were being flooded with papers. We were worried that the papers may be just generated by bots, you know, bot papers, and how to distinguish bot papers from real papers. So that is one of the things that I feel changed, because you're having to review something that may not even be really that new. It might be just digested. So
I agree. I think the volume and the balance between quantity and quality, and how do you maintain that? I mean, we saw it in COVID, right? COVID was at the extreme end of the spectrum, where we were literally inundated with papers. Everyone was like, okay, this could be the most important paper ever, the ClinPharm paper that's going to save the world. Or actually, this could be a complete hoax. And that was very challenging, because it was real time. We had very little time to make decisions. With hindsight, you know, may not have been perfect. I think we did pretty well. But that was quite challenging in terms of finding the right balance between quantity and quality.
Exactly. Really, because the pressure was on to publish the hottest paper, but at the same time to make sure the quality stayed high. So yes, but I think we navigated it very well during those times.
So I think we may already have covered as one of our major challenges, which I think was the COVID pandemic, for sure. So any other challenges that you kind of can think of that we had to kind of face and manage?
None really that we didn't manage. We did manage to get through different challenges. As you know, we were faced with different boards. We always get complaints from somebody. We took on each one. When we get some author who's not happy that their article is rejected, one of the great things about having sister journals is that we don't have to say, no, go away, we don't want you, but we can triage to our sister journals. You know, this is more appropriate for PSP. So I think our family of journals really has saved us, you know, from having to do those flat out rejections all the time.
No, thanks for bringing it back. I think the evolution of the ASCPT journal family has definitely kind of also been a main feature of the last 5-6 years.
Exactly. It's a real positive also for authors because, you know, you write your article and it's turned down, but you're given a pass over to another journal and all the journals are doing very well.
I think when we took over, I think we kind of felt that one of our main, I don't know if it was a challenge or just task, was to serve ASCPT and reader audience, which is quite diverse. And for example, you already mentioned in the past, ASCPT was heavily focused on MDs, then the PharmDs, PhDs emerged, and now it's a mix of people who share a common interest in application of clinical pharmacology. They come from different backgrounds. And I think you and I have always felt that it would be very important to maintain that kind of, let's call it MD, PharmD balance, right? In terms of the composition of the editorial team, editorial board, etc. And I feel that we've done a pretty good job in maintaining that balance. And hopefully readers and ASCPT members have felt the same.
Yes, I also have the same feeling that, you know, we were conscious. It was not something that just happened. We thought about it. But the other thing I think we should emphasize, Pete, that we may be forgetting is we also cared a lot about the members. And so having a lot of original research articles, making sure we kept the original research articles and not just become only review articles. I mean, of course, we published some state of the arts and all that. But those original research articles are very important for us to be publishing.
Yeah, that's a good point, because that was actually one of the main challenges we were given by the board of directors when we took over, to kind of substantially increase the number of original research articles. And yeah, maybe that was our biggest challenge, because in a way, that's very easy. You just publish more research, but to maintain quality whilst at the same time increasing the number of original articles was arguably the point we discussed most in our editorial team.
Exactly, because we wanted original research articles, but they had to be of high quality. So, you know, and you can never predict what's going to be the most highly cited. That you can't do. You just want high quality. So, yes.
Now, a very different topic.
Okay.
Covers, like, you know, GPT obviously is well known for its eye-catching covers. So can you think of a favorite one? A favorite cover?
I can't remember. This might have been an early one, but I can't help it. I'm a transporter person. I love transporters. So I could not help but love the one of the London subway system, you know, that transport one, showing the complexities of transport and making a point about transporters being so important. So that is my favorite, that one. So what do you think?
Well, let me first start to say that when I took on the job, I thought, okay, I can do the science, I can do teamwork. The one thing I really, really dreaded was the covers.
Yeah.
It's an understatement to say that I'm not artistic in certainly the conventional way. You know, I can't draw. I have two left hands. So that one, I was like, oh, you know, and how do you come up with a eye-catching cover on like an ICH guideline on biosimilars?
Yes.
Anyway, very quickly, it became one of my favorite kind of tasks, because every month, you know, we sat down with the ASCPT team. We said, okay, let's pick a lead article and now brainstorm about what could the cover look like. And we really got into this mode of throwing out ideas. Elena often had great ideas, and it was just wonderful. How do you extract like a cartoon from a scientific paper? It became my favorite, and I'll miss that a lot because I really, really enjoyed it. So there's a lot of ones that I probably, but the two that stand out is the one that I already mentioned, which was the diversity, the rainbow of tablet. I mean, that was quite a spec, and we even got a prize for that, I think, from some publishing organization as the most eye-catching cover or something. The second one, I actually printed it out and have it framed, was also in 2021. So here's a topic, the ICA's guidelines on QT prolongation. I mean, not something you can immediately think of like, whoa, you know, I can think. Anyway, we came up with this idea of two pills pulling an ECG.
Oh, like, yes. Wow.
I mean, that was still, I feel that was just so great. And it just, it's a wonderful cartoon and it captures the essence of
long QT
in a very different way.
No, I like that. I want to add on to what you're saying. One of the covers I enjoyed working, and I want to bring up the staff now, because the staff engaged in the covers. They engaged with us. They were part of our team. And so this one was on green tea and all the drug interactions. And we had a teacup there and with pills and things like that. So it was our prescription. It was actually quite nice. And I do want to say that our family included our associate editors. It included the two of us, but it also included the staff, as well as that wonderful meeting we had every year with the editorial board, where all the people who are really rolling up their sleeves and doing the reviews, those were also part of our family. And I love those meetings, by the way. So that was all.
Yeah, that was great. No, thanks. I mean, certainly we don't have time to mention every individual, because so many people, but they're known as our A-team. Alethea and Amy.
Exactly.
I will miss working with them so much. You know, you were and are brilliant and doing all the incredibly important work in the background, keeping it on track. And don't forget, you know, CPT comes out every month as planned in print with a cover, with an editorial, with everything else. I mean, that is like an incredible, you know, logistical challenge to keep doing that nonstop. As you said, Kathy, the editorial board, very grateful for them for all their input and all the reviewers. I was thinking, okay, we get about 1,000 submissions a year to CPT. So that means we have at least 1,000, but more peer reviewers.
Exactly.
Putting in all their effort and in their spare time, basically. Like, it's just incredible that people are willing to do that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. No, I think we can turn it back over to Elena. Pete, this has been really fun. Has been more fun than I thought it would be. So
it was wonderful. We could go on forever, but we probably are.
Well, I really enjoyed just listening to the two of you speak. There's a lot that I learned in there. Also, I will just add that CPT had almost 2,000 submissions last year.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Our submission numbers have doubled since you two took over. She's very healthy. She's a very healthy I just want to thank you both so much. This is a great conversation, and I really did enjoy being a fly on the wall, so to speak. I love hearing about people's professional journeys and how the sandwich gets made in terms of job policies and workflows. And we really are going to miss you, Kathy, and you, Pete, at CPT. But we know you'll both continue to be involved with ASCPT, and we hope you'll still consider the odd review now and then if you have time. Thank you again for stopping by. Pete and Kathy's final issue of CPT, which focuses on innovations in clinical pharmacology, is available on the CPT journal site, and you can find a link to that outstanding publication in the description of this episode. Thank you for listening to ClinPharm Pod. Be sure to check out past episodes while you're here, and remember to visit ascpt.org for updated podcast releases, our latest webinars, and the most recent issue of all three journals.